Time for us to catch up with Matt Stringer, RNIB's chief executive, for a weekly catch up this week. Quite an important one today, because Matt, you have been giving evidence to the COVID-19 inquiry at Westminster.
Yes, that's right, Alan. I was representing the Disability Charity Consortium, and clearly we're the big major UK-wide charity supporting disabled people, and we come together as a consortium and we work with government and other institutions across the UK. But it was important that we came together to be able to participate in the appropriate modules of the National COVID Inquiry to really get the point across about how disabled people weren't supported and thought about enough through the national response to COVID. So we took that decision some time ago, actually, but we got core participant status. We submitted a witness statement over the summer. I was required to attend the inquiry in person and take questions from the Inquiry Council around our submissions and around those points I've made about how disabled people fared during COVID. So it was a really important hour, I hope, to be able to get across, as I say, all those critical points about how the national response to COVID really didn't support disabled people in the UK.
You had your, as you say, your DCC hat on, not just RNIB this time, so very much a pan-disability approach to the evidence that you were giving here. What came out a lot of this for me was communication seemed to be the difficult part, whether that was things like signing or captioning in live TV debates or information, or people just receiving information not in their preferred formats, accessible formats and so on. So straight away, people are sort of on the back foot when it comes to knowing what's going on and what they have to do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we all remember spring 2020 and that national response decisions being made very quickly, implemented very quickly, a lot of people under a lot of pressure. That was all understood. I think though within that, what the response showed was that we had not done the preparation to make sure that we could communicate appropriately with disabled people who have very different requirements when it comes to being able to assimilate information. And clearly at the time, we were all hooked on those daily sort of press conferences about what we're being instructed to do and the sort of direction of travel of COVID. And, you know, as a nation, we were not able to provide information that was accessible for disabled people. I mean, with my RNIB hat on, you know, we were lobbying to try and make sure letters around shielding and other comms wasn't just sent in a sort of written form that no one could read, which was the case. And we did a lot to try and make that accessible and get ourselves involved in making sure blind and partially sighted people could get correspondence that we could help with in the appropriate format. But if you're the RNID supporting people with hearing loss, British government didn't routinely put sign language interpreters on the side of press conferences. You had a lot of challenge for people who might have had learning disabilities who couldn't, again, access communications. And I think just generally, you know, disabled people weren't thought about enough before in a sort of non-pandemic environment. And then when the pandemic came and the country had to very quickly respond, it was found wanting because these preparations had not been made and the voices of disabled people had not been factored into that before.
Things were very reactive at the time, and we think about things like the Accessible Health Information Standard. That's been around since 2016. That should have been brought into play so people got information at the right time. You know, we think about perhaps testing kits which weren't accessible, or even going out and about, social distancing if you're going to shops and things like that, if you're able to do that. You know, there was a lot lacking which perhaps could have been done if the proper preparatory work had been done in the past.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, there's a ton of legislation that the country has passed from 1995, actually, in terms of various equality acts and acts that fundamentally make public bodies have to consider, you know, the provision of their goods and services and the communication therein to be on the level playing field for everybody and to make the necessary adjustments and to conduct the necessary equality impact assessments to make that the case. Clearly, we have been paying lip service to that because it didn't actually happen. And as you just said, one of the critical points here within a health service context and my participation, it was in the particular module of the inquiry looking at the NHS and sort of health provision, was that there has been, as you just said in your question, an accessible information standard requirement, which was mandated back in 2016, which fundamentally makes the NHS required to provide communications in the format to which the individual wants is most suited. And for us, that could be in Braille or large format font. Clearly, for other people who might be deaf or have learning difficulties, it could be in different formats. And clearly, that didn't happen. So people were missing information because they couldn't see it or they couldn't hear it or they just weren't aware of it. And even if they were aware of it, you know, you were having to get friends, families, neighbors, whomever, often to come and help you understand it or read it. You know, and that might well be days after the event, you know, where you were getting critical information about shielding. And as you said, Alan, as you move through COVID, critical information about vaccinations or about testing, all of which was denied you as a, or potentially denied you as a disabled person in a way that we weren't denying it to people who weren't disabled. And it is a nonsense that that 2016 mandated accessible information standards within the health service has not been implemented. And actually it was my parting shot yesterday. My parting recommendation to the inquiry was to go away and recommend and mandate that that is implemented. And I think, you know, the challenge there is there's not been the central direction about that across a sort of fragmented health service with 43 individual boards in England and the different devolved nations, you know, owning health matters. And there hasn't been the local will to do it. And we know now, I mean, you know, the scope of the inquiry was 2020 to 2022. But we know last year and this year, we as the RNIB are still doing a lot of work with the health service and government, and government's changed, I know, but pushing for the accessible information standards to be implemented for the benefit of blind and partially sighted people. But as a, you know, as you just said, wearing my DCC hat yesterday, it's a benefit for more people than just blind and partially sighted people. So that's a big thing. And again, it's up and ready. It's ready to go. It doesn't need a lot of work. It just needs implementing. And that could be, we hope, a strong recommendation from the inquiry.
A bigger point as well that you made, Matt, was around policy, whether that was, you know, policies being made, you know, reacting to the ever-changing situation during COVID, but policies going forward that things like accessibility are taken into consideration, people with disabilities and their needs are taken into consideration really at all policy levels. Although there were discussions during lockdown and COVID and so on, I think some of that perhaps wasn't taken up, and perhaps that should be something now when it comes to government making legislation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the DCC group, you know, that I was representing yesterday, have been going in that forum on and off for about 15 years, you know, and actually I've been involved in my time at the RNIB in various meetings with a DCC sort of badge on it with ministers. And we have met recently the new Labour government, Stephen Timms. We had a meeting with teams from the DCC going along to talk about employment and welfare, for example. We did a lot of work with Justin Tomlinson, previous disability minister, around the National Disability Strategy when the Conservatives were in power. We've had Tom Persglow visit the RNIB when he was occupying that role about a year ago. We've met Mims Davis when she was occupying the role just before the election. So, you know, we have had those contacts. I think the issue is things getting done. I mentioned access to work. We've done a lot there, and actually things have improved, but there's still a backlog. You know, there's a lot of frustration, I suppose, in making sure that policy inputs and influences we have, which often seem a no-brainer, are actually then fully implemented across the sort of machinery of government. And I think, as you just said in your question, you know, when we looked at COVID, you know, a lot of things which should have been in place hadn't really been implemented and then fell apart when COVID put pressure on the system, such as the accessible comms we've just talked to. But as decisions were being made on things like hospital visiting, you know, on who should be shielding because they're clinically vulnerable, on use of resources in the health service where nurses who were trained in sort of in being able to support people of a learning disability were put into another part of the health operation, which you could sort of understand, but again, it left disabled people more high and dry, who got used to a process and people, and suddenly that was denied them. You know, I got a slight question at one stage from Baroness Hallett, who's a chair of the inquiry, who basically was saying, well, are you saying to me that you're advocating that there should be that real nuance so that the health service can cope with disabled people as individuals? Surely, if we go down that route, the individuals in the health service won't be able to cope. And I said, well, are we looking at running the health service for the benefit of its staff or looking at it for the benefit of the patients? And I think we should be looking at it for the benefit of the patients and making it work and having disabled people's input into decisions and policy in steady state, making the thing as watertight as we can, which gives us the best chance when a pandemic or other crisis hits, that some of those improvements and benefits and the way that disabled people are seen as individuals and supported as individuals endure through a pandemic or a crisis.
No doubt more to come on that, Matt, as well, over the coming months and beyond, no doubt, as well. We'll be touching on that again. We also recently had World Sight Day, and I know here at RNIB Connect Radio, we were talking a lot about the eye care support pathway. That was a big thing. Not just supporting people who are going through that sight loss journey, you know, making sure there's a real holistic approach to providing all sorts of support and help, but also, you know, encouraging people to go for those eye checks and make sure they keep those appointments as well.
Eye health is a really important issue. We don't support people well enough in this country who have eye health issues. As you just said, the work we've been doing in collaboration with other charity partners, Royal Colleges, the NHS and the devolved nations, and corporate input there as well, to get the pathway off the ground a year ago, and then have the session we did at Aston University about a month ago to really get the practitioners rode in behind. We're very pleased with that. But, you know, what we're trying to do is to get people having a better experience when they develop an eye health condition and able to follow some sort of pathway, so you know how you're moving along, and you're moving along with confidence and with knowledge and getting the best support you can at whatever stage from whomever is the right person to provide that support, which might not be the RNIB, might be someone else. But at its start, it is taking eye health really seriously. And as you just said, you know, one of the critical things listeners can do, and I think I'm probably preaching to the converted with Connect Radio listenership, but is having those eye health checkups, going regularly. It's every 2 years, going to have that checkup, because the earlier, you know, anyone knows you've got an issue, then the earlier it can be supported and dealt with. And we know various eye conditions, if you know about them early, you can actually mitigate and support and prevent it becoming more of a problem down the line. We know that eye health, you know, your vision is a sense that people fear losing the most, and therefore we should be most keen to go and have our eyes checked to make sure we're on top of it. I know I go and have mine done every 2 years. I haven't done earlier this year. I've got good news. My eye health hadn't deteriorated. I need better glasses, but same lens strength. But, you know, it's amazing to see the x-rays and the scans of the back of your eye and looking at the pressure and all the things that they test. We would issue a very strong recommendation for people to go and have their eye health checkups regularly.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to find out more about the eye care support pathway or RNIB's services, do have a look at the website. It's rnib.org.uk. You can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. And if you have an Amazon Echo device, you can ask Lady A to contact RNIB's helpline. Out of time, Matt. We'll catch up with you again next week. But thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, my pleasure, Alan, and it's been an important week this week, but I think, you know, both on World Sight Day and on the COVID inquiry, it's given us a platform to make some really important points, and I think we've managed to do that quite well. So we end the week in good shape, I think. Good to speak to you.